Hey, if you're listening to this, I will assume you're at least interested in money, understanding the economy, and finances as well. And some of us now want to get the next generation interested as well. So check out Million Bazillion, Marketplace's award-winning kids podcast that breaks down money to help dollars make more sense. Tune into Million Bazillion wherever you find your favorite podcasts. A whole new season is out now. Million Bazillion is presented in partnership with Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Greenlight helps kids and teens learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. Get 1 month free and an extra $10 when you sign up for a Greenlight account at greenlight.com/million.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Coming up on the broadcast today, we follow the money from J.P. Morgan Chase. We do pro sports and the Affordable Care Act. And we take a trip to the dentist. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Let Marketplace be your guide to the modern world. Subscribe to the Marketplace Tech Report podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. This is the Marketplace podcast for Thursday, the 19th of September. Good to have you here. This was something of a day of reckoning for J.P. Morgan Chase, one of the biggest of the big banks on Wall Street. The case at hand has come to be known as the London Whale, the nickname given to a trader in the company's London office who found a way to lose $6 billion last year. In an agreement announced today in which regulators pretty much skewered the bank's top management, J.P. Morgan will pay more than $900 million in fines by way of penance. Marketplace's David Gurra reports on where that money might go and what other costs might still be on the horizon.
It's one of the biggest fines in recent memory. James Cox is a professor of corporate and securities law at Duke, and he says that J.P. Morgan settlement money is going to help us pay down our federal debt.
It just goes into the vast sieve called the federal purse.
Some money from J.P. Morgan may also end up in your purse or wallet. In a separate settlement, the company agreed to pay an additional $300 million to credit card customers charged for add-ons that they didn't receive. Now, not all of the London Whale settlement will go to the Treasury Department. $220 million will go to the UK. Some money could end up with investors. Hilary Sale is a professor at Washington University in St. Louis, and she says the Securities and Exchange Commission has options.
The SEC can take money and instead of putting it into the Treasury, can, at its discretion, figure out how to route that money back to the harmed investors.
That process could take a while. So could civil suits. Those could grow because J.P. Morgan did something today other big financial firms haven't done. It admitted wrongdoing. Sale says it seems J.P. Morgan has anticipated more legal bills. A few weeks ago, the company announced it's building up its defenses.
The money they've set aside for legal reserves, and they also made public that they've hired 3,000 new employees to do legal and compliance work.
Those employees don't come cheap. J.P. Morgan has earmarked an extra $1.5 billion to cover litigation costs. In Washington, I'm David Gurra for Marketplace.
Here's some perspective on that $920 million fine that J.P. Morgan's going to be paying. It is just shy of 13 days worth of the bank's profits from last quarter. If you live in a big city, you might have noticed cars driving around with big, fluffy pink mustaches on their grills. Turns out, believe it or not, that's intentional. They're from an internet car-for-hire service called Lyft. And along with other companies called Uber and Sidecar, they are changing the taxi industry as we know it. Today, California took a first step to regulate and perhaps legitimize those companies, as Marketplace's Adrian Hill reports.
Ride-sharing apps like Lyft let you hail a ride with your smartphone. And for a lot of people, they worked great. As long as you don't mind that your ride comes decked with an ironic mustache and the guy driving it some dude in his own car. Lisa Schweitzer is with the USC Price School of Public Policy.
I like the big pink mustaches, but I can honestly say absolutely nobody asks me about anything when it comes to matters of taste.
But when it comes to matters of transportation, she's the woman, and she thinks these car services make a lot of sense.
You make your request via your iPhone, and then all of those transactions about who's going to take the cab, you know, where are you headed? That's all arranged by virtue of geolocating.
Geolocation is amazing. Plus, the payment piece is taken care of online, not awkwardly in the cab. Up till today, the future of these pop-up cabs and cab drivers in California was murky. No one knew for sure if they'd be allowed to keep driving. Today's vote by the California Public Utilities Commission answers that. These amateur cabbies are here to stay.
I think it's quite significant.
Juan Matute is with the UCLA Institute of Transportation Studies. The new California regulations mean that companies will have to get a license from the state, run background checks on drivers, provide training, insurance, a lot of things they say they do already. It's a clear win for the up-and-comers and a loss for old-school cabbies.
It will be difficult for taxi cab drivers to continue doing exactly what they've been doing in the past.
Without a monopoly, cabbies are going to have to step up, improving the way people find them and the quality of the ride. I'm Adrienne Hill for Marketplace.
On Wall Street today, two down, one up. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. The fourth biggest economy on the planet holds elections on Sunday. German Chancellor Angela Merkel is expected to win and form another coalition government with the same partners she has now. So, business as usual? Not entirely, as Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports from Berlin.
This doesn't look like a German election campaign.
Kennen Sie schon die neue Partei Alternative für Deutschland?
Nein.
Campaigner Friedrich Hilser is on the street handing out leaflets for the AfD, dressed from head to toe in a bright blue body stocking.
It's really a full body suit, so there's no part of the body visible.
So you look like Spider-Man.
We look like a superhero a bit, like a blue-colored Spider-Man. And actually, we also want to show we are the AfD heroes.
Friedrich is a serious young man, a PhD economics student, but he wants to shake up what he calls the stodginess of German politics and the stifling consensus over the euro.
This is what we need in German politics, a bit more colour and new ideas.
It's no accident that Friedrich is an economist. The AfD is full of them. The party has almost 300 economics professors. Here's one of them whipping up a storm on the campaign trail. The party argues that the euro in its current form has failed. Christian Schmidt, another AfD economist, says if the currency is to survive, it needs radical surgery.
To have most of the southern countries leave the eurozone.
That means Greece, Cyprus, Spain, Italy?
And even Portugal and possibly even France.
Yes, he's serious, even though the departure of so many member states could trigger financial mayhem.
It is better to face up to what doesn't really work in economic terms today, because the final bill will be much higher the longer you wait.
The problem for the AfD is that so far Germany's done very nicely out of the euro. Just ask the country's exporters. This family-owned steelworks in the northwest exports most of its products, helped by competitive pricing in euros. Executive Stephen Meyer.
The euro for business is much more easier than the Deutschmark was before. The Deutschmark today would be much more expensive than the euro.
Largely thanks to its exports, the German economy is doing much better than its southern neighbours. Nora Hesser of the Open Europe think tank says the euro crisis hasn't really hit the Germans.
No one is actually feeling the crisis here. They see it on the news, they read in the newspapers, something is going on, but they just don't feel it in their everyday life. They have their jobs, you know, life is good in Germany.
And presiding over this benign scenario is a brilliant politician who understands the benefits of dullness. Angela Merkel is boringly reassuring. The AfD has derided her with innovations like this animated puppet show, but to no avail. Opinion surveys suggest the party may not win a single seat in Sunday's election. The AfD's real problem is that Germany has lent hundreds of billions to southern Europe, but so far it hasn't lost a single cent. However, Christian Schmidt claims that after the election it'll be a different story. Germany will have to write off some of the debt.
77% of the German public no longer wishes to send one more euro to Greece. And once the haircut will be done, and it's inevitable, then definitely taxes will have to go up, and finally German public feels it in their pocketbook.
Then, he says, the AfD won't need Spider-Man suits or puppet shows to grab the public's attention. The crisis will move to center stage, dragging the AfD with it. In Berlin, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
There's going to be another vote in the House tomorrow to defund Obamacare. For those keeping track, it'll be the 42nd time that House Republicans will have done so. This one will be tied to a temporary spending bill keeping the government up and running. But while Congress does what it does, efforts to promote the Affordable Care Act are rolling right along. The White House is trying just about anything to get people to sign up, including enlisting the help of professional sports. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer reports from Washington. There has been mixed success.
My, how things have changed. When Massachusetts was trying to promote its health care reform law in 2007, it partnered with the Boston Red Sox. Pitcher Tim Wakefield appeared in ads promoting the exchange where Massachusetts residents could buy health insurance. It was known as the Connector.
So visit the Health Connector.
There was
today.
A special Cover Your Bases night at Fenway Park and information booths at all home games so fans could find out about health insurance plans and even enroll. But now that healthcare reform has gone national, things are different. No Major League Baseball teams are helping promote it. Football teams have shied away, too, except for the Baltimore Ravens. They'll run this ad.
It's a new day.
Before and after game broadcasts.
Get the health coverage you need. Total health coverage indeed.
Becca Pierce is executive director of Maryland's Exchange. She says it was a no-brainer to partner with the Ravens to promote the exchange because many of Maryland's uninsured are young men who like the Ravens.
So we know in our research that 71% of the uninsured either watched, listened to, or attended a Ravens game in the past year.
Pierce says the exchange has a partnership with the Ravens, but it's not like players will be touting the benefits of health insurance. And the team says the deal is nothing special. The Ravens compared it to other advertising arrangements with the Maryland Lottery and Verizon. And they turned down our request to talk about the ads. Sports marketers say there's a reason the Ravens are downplaying their deal with the Maryland Exchange. Chris Anderson is with the firm Marketing Arm.
The team might actually anger the fans, and they might be so upset, in fact, that the fans say, you know what, I'm not even going to come back to the game next week.
Anderson says President Obama's health care reform law is much more political and controversial than the Massachusetts plan was. In fact, a couple months ago, Republican congressional leaders sent a letter to six professional sports leagues, including the NFL. The letter warns that a team would, quote, risk damaging its inclusive and apolitical brand by helping promote health care reform. But the letter writers left soccer off the list.
This is jeopardy. This is victory. It's in the net.
D.C. United, Washington's soccer team, will help promote the District of Columbia's exchange. Mila Kaufman heads the D.C. exchange. She says they're sponsoring three D.C. United games next month, running public announcements, and setting up information booths in the parking lot and stadium. Kaufman says D.C. United is looking beyond politics.
We know that fans are Republicans and Democrats, and some don't care about politics at all. And this is all about the facts, getting the facts to the fans so they can make more informed decisions.
You might think D.C. United would be eager to get out the facts about the partnership, but it seems they're following the Ravens' lead. Even a team that has signed on to promote the health care reform law turned down our request for an interview. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
Coming up.
Throughout the years, I've learned that patients have a lot of anxiety.
It starts from their childhood experience.
Yes, yes, it does. A dentist today on our series, You Hate My Job. But first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Industrial's off 40 points today, 0.25%, closed at 15,636. The NASDAQ gained 5 points, 0.1%, 3789 there. The S&P 500 down 3 points, 0.1%, 1722 at the bell. All right, imagine this party. The guests include Peter Pan, Slim Jim, Orville Redenbacher, Marie Callender, and Pam. It's catered by Chef Boyardee and P.F. Chang. Who do you suppose is the host? Well, that would be ConAgra, the giant packaged foods conglomerate. Last quarter, though, no party for its profits, down 42%. Today, shares off 4%. Rite Aid, the pharmacy chain, surprised everybody with higher profits, soared 24%. Today, Take-Two Interactive Software gained 1.67% after announcing first-day sales of Grand Theft Auto V topped $800 million. That's a lot of cars and guns and bullets, people. You're listening to Marketplace.
Do you enjoy the music we play between stories? Visit the Marketplace Music section to browse playlists for all of our programs and to buy those songs on Amazon. A percentage of each purchase goes towards supporting our programs. Find more online at marketplace.org/music.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a glance at what's coming up Friday. President Obama is scheduled to speak at a Ford plant in Liberty, Missouri. Ceremonies across the nation honor prisoners of war and those still missing in action. And 40 years ago, Billie Jean King defeated Bobby Riggs in a legendary and still talked about tennis match dubbed the Battle of the Sexes. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from APM. I'm Kai Rizdal. Aside from maybe outright theft, somebody just walking out of a store with something, retailers spend more time worrying about bogus returns as a money-losing proposition than pretty much anything else. Bloomingdale's is the latest innovator in that space with, it has to be said, a fairly straightforward solution. A big 3-inch black plastic tag affixed to expensive dresses in prominent places. Bloomies won't refund customers without that tag attached to avoid, somebody buying a dress and wearing it once and returning it the next day. Marketplace's Sabri Benishore reports return policies have been getting expensive for companies.
In 2011, this couple posted a YouTube video of themselves at a Kohl's department store returning a wedding gift.
It has the receipt on it.
7 years later.
I'm so embarrassed right now.
The cookie maker was so old, the cashier couldn't find it in the system. But because of the chain's generous return policy, she happily gave the couple store credit.
7 years later, $32. Let's go look in the house. Good stuff.
Some customers have taken policies like this a little too far, returning stuff that was just worn out or years old. Outdoor equipment retailer REI says dubious returns were eating into its profits, so it had to put a 1-year limit on its return policy.
It's a pretty widespread problem.
Richard Mellor is vice president for loss prevention at the National Retail Federation. He's especially concerned about what's known as wardrobing, buying something, using it for a day or two, and then returning it.
It's now affecting just shy of 65% of the retailers that we survey. Back in 2009, it was in the 45% range.
Wardrobing is behind Bloomingdale's putting big black tags on dresses over $150. Mellor says unscrupulous consumers also get tools for a weekend construction project or TVs for game night.
Retailers experience this kind of trend around Super Bowl time.
Fraudulent returns cost the retail industry $8.8 billion last year. Maybe it's the recession, but Stephen Barkin, a sociologist at the University of Maine, says in an age of viral videos, it could just be the good old copycat effect.
It's possible, though far from proven, that other people hear about it happening and they might say, well, let's do it ourselves.
And ruin the return policies for everyone else. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore for Marketplace.
There are a lot of people out there who aren't going to like what I'm about to say, but there is no turning back the digital tide, people. The internet is upon us and it's not going away. We can shop and travel and manage our lives online. Most of us have adapted or, if necessary, just succumbed, except for a certain few, those who still use good old-fashioned paper checks. Alex Schmidt reports.
Imagine never missing a bill payment. Imagine only having to remember one online password.
That's the pitch from a new service called Manila.
Manila is a free service that automatically organizes all of your bills in one secure place. It takes about 90 seconds to sign up and get started.
Sounds pretty good, right? But a lot of people aren't even close to using a bill-paying app. Many still use paper checks. Here's a random sampling of folks in a Los Angeles mall. How do you pay your bills?
I still send them out by mail.
I do a combination of direct withdrawal and online. It depends.
I have still maintained getting a paper copy sent to my house.
It's been 13 years since online bill pay allowed folks to go paperless and automatic. But today, only 50% of U.S. consumers pay bills online. Why?
The decision a person makes to adopt a new technology is based on two key factors. Number one, their perception of whether the technology is useful. And then secondly, it should also be easy to use.
That's Fred Davis, a professor of information systems at the University of Arkansas. He studies the ways consumers adopt new technology habits. Davis says personal finance habits take longer to change than the way you might switch from one smartphone to another. That's because money is so important to us.
Sometimes this holding on to the old way of doing things is quite rational.
Davis says it's not just stubbornness and emotion that keeps people from changing.
For them to use the electronic statements, maybe it's going to be more of a hassle and more effort because now I have to log in, remember my password. And so there is a convenience factor.
Now, banks and other services would love to see consumers automate and ditch paper altogether. In fact, that's one way free financial apps make a profit. Every time someone signs up and goes paperless, Manila gets money from your cell phone company, your bank, or cable service. In the U.S., banks spend a combined $1.5 billion supporting paper check payments every year. Paul McAdam at Fidelity Information Services says a few years back, the British government tried to set a deadline for elimination of paper checks, but
they had to back off and completely scrap those plans due to public outcry. And they said that the UK banking system would keep checks as long as customers needed them. I think that if a similar thing were attempted in the United States, we'd see the same reaction.
Folks here in the U.S. probably don't need prodding. We're writing fewer and fewer checks every year. And at that rate, they could naturally disappear by the year 2026. Rest assured, we, the consumers, will set the timeline. I'm Alex Schmidt for Marketplace.
Even though the recession is over and the financial crisis started more than 5 years ago, fact is that people are still happy just to have a job, almost any job. But there are some jobs in this economy that don't get any love, not the jobs and not the people who have them. Today's case in point, Catherine Tubian, DDS.
Hey, just try to stay as open as you can. Is everything okay? Yeah.
When you meet somebody, is the first thing you do look at their teeth?
That's all I do.
I'm very self-conscious now. I have to go like that, cover my mouth.
Well, I'll give you my card.
No, see, actually, the truth is I am a dental chicken. I really hate going to the dentist.
Really?
And, well, the thing about it is you put it off a little while, and then it's easier to keep putting it off. And then you say, oh, man, my teeth are really bad. And then I just keep putting it off, and then you just never go. I mean, I do go because my wife makes me, but...
You don't go, number one, is because you do have an underlying fear. And
I
nothing
do.
Is hurting.
These
right?
two teeth, right? They got knocked
right.
out when I was a kid, and I had right. caps, and I spent like my whole 7th grade year in a dentist chair.
You know, throughout the years, I've learned that patients have a lot of anxiety. It starts from their childhood experience. At some point, the dentist might have inflicted some pain, and without even talking to them, pretty much strapping them down to the chair. So throughout their adulthood, they just have a huge fear of dentistry. So my goal is when they come into my office, I'd like to undo that. But you can't undo years of anxiety.
You've been in practice, what, 23 years now?
Yes.
Is dentistry recession and economy sensitive? I mean, when the economy goes down, do people not come see you?
You know, yes. The mentality of the patients are so different from 2008. People are a lot more cautious. They have to go online and, you know, really check the online reviews. And
that must make you crazy, online reviews of dentists.
It used to make me crazy amongst all my colleagues. But I used to lose sleep over it. But, you know, you do the best you can. And, yeah, no one's perfect. We all make mistakes. Or there are people that you just, the personalities just don't match.
What's the hardest thing about your job? What's the toughest thing?
I think the business aspect of dentistry is probably the hardest thing. Managing my employees, being a small business owner. I spend a lot of weekends just doing the business part of the dentistry.
I'll let you get back to your patient.
Is it what you expected?
We're doing an occasional series about the jobs people love to hate. Meter readers, bill collectors, dentists. Tweet us yours at Marketplace APM. You can get me at Kai Rizdahl. We'll pick the best and put them on the radio.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business.
This final note on the way out today, in which the time-honored question of what is the matter with you people whose desks are always messy gets answered. Researchers at the University of Minnesota have been doing some experiments, the general gist of which is this. Those who work in tidy surroundings tend to be more conscientious and generous as a result of those surroundings, that is, regardless of how they normally act. Those whose desks and offices are a wreck, Marketplace staffers, you know who you are, tend to be more creative. It's all there for the reading in this Sunday's New York Times Magazine. I, had you not already guessed, happen to have a ship-shape workspace. Thank you very much. All right, we're done. That is Marketplace from APM. I'm going to hear about that. I know it. Today, the Dow off 40 points, about 0.25%. The S&P 500 down 3 points, 0.1%. The NASDAQ gained 5 points. That is 0.1% there. John Buckley, John Haas, George Judson, Jonathan Karp, Ethan Lindsay, Dave Shaw, Betsy Streisand, and Celeste Wesson are the Marketplace editing staff. The managing editor is Sarah Gilbert. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will see you back here tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.